TSIA has released a body of research we are calling AI economics. We are studying how enterprise tech companies are going to create profitable business models in the AI era. There are a lot of moving parts. Leveraging AI to reduce the cost of delivering services, pricing AI solutions to retain margin, and retooling service organizations to deliver next-generation services. One of our main assertions is that enterprise tech companies must climb the value ladder and position AI solutions that are anchored on specific business outcomes. But we know that is not an easy task for most tech companies. I'm Thomas Law, the executive director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, a podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And my guest today is Mari Cross, and she's the chief customer officer at Infor. And we're going to be discussing Infor's journey to create solutions that unlock business value for specific vertical industries. We will also be discussing the current state of the AI era. So let's get this insight engine humming here. Mari, welcome back to Tectonic. It's nice to see you again. And you just delivered a killer keynote for us at our Vegas conference, Envision, in October. And there you were talking about how Infor has been creating these impactful offers for micro verticals. So I want to start with a super simple question here. What the heck is a micro vertical?
Well, thanks, Thomas. It's really great to be here. You know, micro verticals aren't that hard, really. When you think about the concept of an industry, that's been around forever. Mm-hmm. And it's really taking that concept of an industry and taking it at a more granular level, right? So most of the time we talk about healthcare as a construct, but if you really think about it, underneath healthcare, there's hospitals, there's medical providers, there's insurance companies, there's pharmaceuticals. There's so many different subcomponents of that industry that really function differently, and their KPIs are different, the outcomes they're driving is different. And so you can take that concept and apply it to food and beverage. Again, there's how a dairy manufacturer would work or how a food producer would work. And those are really, really different businesses at some really important levels. There's a lot of similarities too, but there's really unique differences. And so that concept of a micro vertical is this idea of taking a specific industry and looking one click deeper within that industry to understand what are the different types of businesses that really support that ecosystem.
Yep, totally get it. And so what was the catalyst at Infor to start focusing at a micro vertical level?
You know, a little bit of the history of where we came from. So we have been in the industry-focused ERP space for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And over time, you know, we were an on-prem business for a long time. We decided to rebuild a lot of our software, and we were rebuilding it. We were thinking about what would be the right architecture for that, what were the commonalities, and what were the differences. And we started thinking about it that way. It really naturally started showing us that as we wanted to build functionality in, there could be this opportunity to go to the micro vertical level and really deliver much more value inherently. And so I think it was really part of that design process that we started really thinking about it. The other thing that we have that is really unique is something called the Infor process catalog that's built into our solutions. And inherently, those are processes that are predefined, they're configured within the solutions themselves. Mm-hmm. And that, again, that forced us to really think about, okay, great, what are the processes that are common for all? And then we started coming up with all these different processes that were actually kind of unique for different micro verticals. Mm-hmm. And it was through that lens that we started really building our architecture for the product.
And just help the audience understand, if somebody wants to start to think in terms of micro verticals and truly serving them effectively, what type of investments did you have to make? You started to talk a little bit about the process libraries that are more specific to each micro vertical, but what are some of the other things you got to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it was very cheap for us, but I think, you know, I will say with the age of AI, I think it's going to be a little bit more interesting, you know, to try to tackle this. But for us, I think we spent over $4 billion building three different platforms and then three different ERPs kind of cores. And then a common platform across them all. And then within them, you know, some of this functionality. So again, $4 billion is probably not for the faint of heart. Not everyone can do that. And we may talk about this later, but I do believe that as we think about building something like that now, I think that some of the new technologies and AI and the ability to do this faster and in kind of a different way becomes really, really interesting.
And also, I mean, when you talk about $4 billion, but that's, you know, your company's been around for a long time. You were already serving a lot of industries. For folks that are listening out there, and this is 100% in line with the research that's been done over the years, has shown that SaaS companies that were vertical right, typically became profitable faster than the horizontal ones because they really understood that industry. So if you're out there, even if you're an AI startup, I think the more focused you are to say, look, I'm really going to understand certain industries deeply to solve their problems, and I'm not going to just throw this generic capability out there, see what sticks. I think that that is good thinking right now in today's world. And that level of specificity, you know, in terms of, you know, having all that kind of information, how does that change the conversation when you're serving a micro vertical? It changes the conversation with your buyer, like the CFO that you're selling to. Talk about some of the advantages there.
Honestly, you speak their language and you understand their pain. So like, if you think about it, just a generic discovery process where you come in and you say, hi, Mr. CFO, tell me what you care about right now. What are your priorities? Yeah. That conversation is very generic. It takes a long time to get to the true essence of what customers really need and what drives them. And though I very much so believe that every organization does have uniqueness and they have their special sauce, something that they're really focused on, or even different dynamics within the history of their company, if you look at it through the micro vertical lens, I would say 80% of what they care about is actually pretty standard. Mm-hmm. So that if you can come in a much more intelligent way and actually almost have a discovery through the lens of like, hey, tell me how efficient is your warehousing operation? Mm-hmm. Or from an industry perspective, we've seen that other customers are really struggling with optimizing this aspect of your business. How's that working for you? You can be pretty targeted. And I don't know if you've noticed, but like if you go talk to, for instance, in the telecom industry, guess what? They don't have normal words they use. It's like gross ads, net ads. Very different metrics, right? The same true in a different industry and, you know, different one after that, right? And even in the same kind of construct, sometimes different metrics matter more or less, right? So, you know, for one type of company, on-time delivery might be important, but not the end-all be-all. And in another type of micro vertical, it might be like the only thing that matters. Being able to hone in on kind of some of those really deep pain points because you understand the foundation. And I think traditionally companies have been trying to do this regardless, right? They try to train their teams in the industry and they try to get them to have those conversations. It just becomes a lot more simple when you can much more quickly tie it to the product itself and how we're solving for it. And, you know, that conversation becomes really, really interesting.
Yeah. So I'm going to play some of that back. And I'm actually curious and I want to ask you a question here. You know, the old day when you come in, like you say, hey, tell me what's keeping you up at night and we'll sleep again. I think those days are gone. I think you do have to come in and really understand the customer. Historically, in enterprise tech, we've done what TSIA calls the thin vertical veneer.
Yeah.
So we kind of try to train our sales team. We give them some marketing materials and we say, oh, this is what healthcare people care about, the top three things, whatever. But they really don't really get it. They don't really speak the language like you're talking about. And so first of all, you know, we're talking about really going several clicks in, understanding their vernacular, really understanding their issues and being able to address those. I think that is becoming more and more table stakes for a technology provider. But the other thing, I'm just curious because, you know, TSIA, in many ways, we do the same thing, right? We are looking for the pattern recognition across companies on, you know, how they run professional services or CS or whatever. And one of the things that always is kind of comical to me, I'd be curious how you deal with it in these micro verticals, is you go into a company, you start, you know, you're looking at their environment, and you're like, man, I've seen this problem 100 times before. Like, I know exactly what they should be focused on. And you, I mean, you know exactly what the prescription should be. And I'm sure in these micro verticals, you know, you get a new customer in a vertical you've been serving for a while, you know it. It doesn't take you for, I mean, you quickly, like, this is the problem. And then that prospect, right, that potential customer comes back and says, whoa, like, but I'm super special. I'm not like those other people that you've been working with from my micro vertical. You don't understand, Thomas. We're very unique here. And, you know, my reaction, again, I'm very curious how you handle this because I'm sure you run into it. My reaction to that, and I've said this to very senior people in companies, I'll say, look, I want to tell you something I hope your mother never told you, which is that you're actually not special. But how do you deal with that when you hit that one customer who's just like, I'm not like everybody else?
You know, I think, honestly, I think the proof is usually like just through the lens of the conversation. Like, I actually, I never need to be right in a conversation like that. I don't need to convince anyone that they are or not special. The focus for us is just like, well, let's figure out where that is. Through the nature of the conversation, you get to the point where they probably are 80% totally similar. But I also don't want to take away this concept that like, if you have a luxury manufacturer of goods, right? There might be something about the way they, they really craft.
Oh, there's a secret sauce for sure between companies.
Yeah, there's a secret sauce. And so it really is just like, okay, great. Let's focus on what is that secret sauce? What is it that you believe is done in a really special and unique way? And I think the more they can tell us that what even they perceive to be special versus not, and just getting into the details, the more we can kind of showcase, well, what you've described is actually our standard, standard process. Isn't this great? Your process is already built into, software. Or we can say, okay, great. Well, that can be something that we can really extend or do with you. So we go through a very detailed exercise. We have something called an Engage workshop, where through the lens of business questions, we very much so start honing down on what processes are going to be important for them. And so rather than saying, hey, let's go line by line through every single process that you have, a little tedious, we'll ask some questions like, hey, do you have warehouses that are serving multiple different products, or is it one product? Is it, so we'll just start asking them questions about how they work and pull that out of them. And 9 out of 10 times, it is 80% foundation. So
one more follow-up on that, because I think this is a really interesting thread to me personally, this issue of sort of what is secret sauce versus what is best practice.
Yeah.
So you come to the table with literally a proven library of best practices in a microvertical. That's what you're bringing. And that's part of the value that you're bringing.
Absolutely.
You then have this new customer, your prospect you're talking to. You're doing this, discovery like you're talking about, right? You're finding out how they operate. And then let's say there's a process or a set of processes they look at and they say, well, we do it this way. And really, we think this is our secret sauce. And you are looking at it and you're going, I know that is suboptimal. It's not secret sauce. They don't realize that, they kind of got it upside down here. That does happen. I see this all the time. Right. Like within service organizations, they do it a certain way. They're like, well, you don't understand. And you look at it and you go, we know for a fact, this is just not the way to go about that particular activity. And so I think historically tech companies would be like, fine, we'll just customize the crap out of this for you. We'll bend to your kind of weird world, right? And you kind of end up with a lot of customization and you end up basically propagating a suboptimal process, if you will. Nowadays, I think the better end game is to move that customer to that best practice, and they're going to get better performance because of it. So what happens when you kind of hit that impasse where you're like, okay, this is clearly not secret sauce. This is going to be suboptimal if we propagate what they're currently doing.
Again, very transparently, I think this is even a lesson that we learned ourselves as well, which is, I think there's two things going on. One is that I believe Infor has gotten much more prescriptive around doing such level of depth in the workshops and even our references and trying to get people to go to standard. We even have incentive structures set up to try to keep people to standard.
Makes sense.
A lot of that stems from, we know that anyone who gets overly customized has a harder time taking advantage of innovation.
It's harder for you to support.
Harder for us to support, harder for them to be successful. And so we really try to be very upfront about like, hey, if you stick to standard, like we will do a fixed fee, let's say, because we know exactly what it takes. And if you think about ERP, there's so much risk. It's at the, this really core level. No one's ever enjoyed an ERP implementation before, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways that we try to help guide customers into that. And another thing is, I think there's a level of maturity that's happening with our customers that more and more, even the ones who went off script maybe 4 years ago or help us get back to standard, we now realize we created a monster. So there's a little bit more energy building, I think, in the world around trying to get to that standard and really understanding what multi-tenant, SaaS software brings to an ERP market and, kind of how to think about it. But it is a process for sure.
Yeah. What you just put on the table, first of all, two really interesting things. Number one, financial incentives to get customers to adopt the best practice. I think that's brilliant because it makes everybody's life better. And then secondly, this concept of customers are realizing, I don't want to be off script. I really do want to be, what are the best practices? The person who's running Salesforce's customer success, Jim, he told me the story when he came in there that at Salesforce, the service organization had customized Salesforce's own platform so much that it was like unrecognizable.
So funny.
And he said, we literally had to just blow it up and go back to the standard platform because it was just ridiculous what they had done. So they had gone off script in their own world, right? And so I think there has been a big sea change there where companies are realizing, I don't want to customize this to my world, but there are still some customers that need some convincing. And again, financially helping them get there, I think is super smart. The economics of enterprise tech are breaking. AI startups are threatening the domain of long-established enterprise technology providers. yet it is unclear exactly how technology providers will drive profitable revenue in the AI era. TSIA has always been focused on what it takes to have a profitable business model in enterprise tech. AI Economics is a body of actionable TSIA research that is digging into the future of tech business models. How will AI solutions be priced? What does the next generation tech services portfolio look like? And why does TSIA believe that it is not the end of tech services, but the era of services? Go to tsia.com/AI Economics to learn the answers. So another question here. I think a lot of enterprise buying customers right now are saying, look, I don't want just a technology platform. Like I don't care about, you know, all the features and the bells and whistles and all this stuff. I want you to get me across that last mile. I want you to get me the value, right? And so how in that type of environment are we moving to a world where microvertical solutions and AI technology, et cetera, just becomes the default buying model? Right, that you just really have to stick the landing on the value side of it, not just the technology side of it.
You know, we recently launched what we're calling our Velocity Suite, and it's basically this combination of technologies. It's not just AI, right? It's process mining, it's robotic process automation, it's AI. There's a couple of other things in there, but the whole goal of that is, and we sell it with for our even our net new customers, right? And the goal is to try to say, hey, you don't want to kind of implement technology and then eventually try to focus on how to automate some of it away. Like, let's just figure out how do you automate or, you know, use AI, drive that efficiency into the implementation process. We're also selling it to our existing customers now to say, what can we do? But the interesting part about Velocity Suite is it is not just a collection of technologies. It's actually a catalog of use cases. Mm. And this is, again, where the brilliance of micro verticals comes in. Because guess what? Like, we can actually say, here are 10 incredible use cases prepackaged with these modern technologies that will solve your problem, right? So it's like automating, you know, procure to pay or invoice automation or whatever else it is, end to end. And so I think there's this kind of different approach too. I'm just saying you can sell an outcome now. Sell an outcome, and you had a before and you had an after, and it can be really specific to the need of your type of business. And you can choose it, and 2 months later, you should be, you know, or 1 month later or whatever, depending how complicated it is, you can be up and running. And then it's a catalog. So because of that, we're also trying to foster this idea that continue choosing items to drive value, and they're all outcome-based solutions versus broad platform type of approaches.
Yeah. And I think that AI, I mean, what I'm observing is I really do believe that AI is a technology that is forcing this change in the conversation. You can no longer, I think, come to the table with sort of a napkin ROI. Like, hey, if you put our technology in, it's going to save 10 or 15% here. In theory, that's what should happen. And then we're going to spend the next 6 months putting it in. And then maybe a year later, you got that or didn't get it. But that's really not my problem. And I think AI, to your point, like you're coming in as a technology provider with a catalog of, I can get you this outcome, this count, there's, you know, cost to those or whatever, there's a benefit to those. And then the expectation is you will stick the landing on it. You will stick the landing.
Absolutely.
And I think anybody who's not thinking in those terms, playing the game at that level, I mean, I think, you know, you're coming the outside looking in on these markets, because I think that's what CEOs and CFOs that are buying, that's their expectations.
Well, I mean, and going back to the conversation we were having, which is, you know, the horizontal platform versus the very targeted toward an outcome concept. I mean, you know, even AI, when it first came out, it was just like part of the reason so many of these AI experimentation efforts have failed or have yet to reap benefits is because they were so broad and they weren't focused. And so you have to be thoughtful and package it up to a specific outcome. Otherwise, it's it's fun, but it's not necessarily driving the value that I think people are expecting.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So, and that kind of is a nice bridge. You know, I want to talk to you about just the state of enterprise tech in general. I mean, you and I were talking before, these are really interesting and fascinating times, or exciting times, or terrifying times, all at the same time, right? All at the same time. So, you know, we surveyed our executive advisory board when we were in Vegas and asked them about 20 questions that they could answer anonymously. And then we reviewed the results together. It's a really interesting exercise. And I want to share some of those results, right? So here's a data point. Only 28% of the executives in that room, and this is sort of a great who's who list of tech companies, were not concerned about being disrupted by an AI startup. So all these incumbents, regardless of how big they are, how big their install bases are, the majority of them are like, yeah, I could get, you know, flipped here. And so how do you see the competitive landscape changing in enterprise tech right now?
I share everybody's concern that I do believe that the more we evolve, the more we're getting, I'd say, better solutions out there that can just take a specific part of the problem and solve for it, right? And just like kind of make it go away. And so the idea that people are selling really specific solutions for problems that exist is going to continue.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't completely displace existing software, I think it can start eating away
eating
at that.
Eating into you, yeah.
It's going to be just like a nibble here and a nibble there. I don't see someone building necessarily, at least not yet. In a couple of years, I see this, but right now it's an eating away at value. Mm-hmm. Before someone completely like reimagines, let's say, I don't know, ERP. That's going to take a little while, but the nibbling away at value that is, and it's pretty easy to implement and it's pretty easy to stand up. Now, the flip side of that though is there will be, you know, other challenges that come up for customers, right? Which is how do you manage all these different agents and things that you've purchased, which is really, I mean, that is a concern. If you think about it, if existing customers do go that way and start collecting these point solutions, it might be really cost-effective and drive great outcomes, but they're separate from your ecosystem of existing, you know, platforms. You know, when something goes wrong, you can imagine the ping pong game from a support perspective. So like this idea of the services component behind this technology, I think is actually one of the more interesting things to think about.
For sure.
The tech, I think, can be very, very scary, but the supportability of it is even scarier.
Well, right. I mean, we are arguing, unveiled this in Vegas, you know, we're saying this is not the end of tech services. This is the era of tech services for the very reason that you just put on the table, which is there is a whole category of what we call value maintenance services. Like these AI solutions are different. They're living, breathing things.
Yeah.
You put models in, the data changes, something changes, the model needs to be tweaked. Like you said, people are going to put some point solutions in and, you know, shit's going to break. So there is going to be a huge service opportunity to keep people tuned that like we've never ever seen before, not break fix. I mean, like keep them tuned and optimized. So, I mean, I think there's just tons of opportunity there. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that we think like the Infors of the world have a huge competitive advantage because you already have global service capabilities. You already have well-established partners. You already know how to serve enterprise tech at scale. I mean, you know how to do that. And so these startups don't have that. They might have really wicked cool technology, but you mean like these numbers coming out of OpenAI about the size of the PS business they want to build, the consulting business, you know, they want to go from $5 billion to $13 billion to like $35 billion in 3 years. I mean, that's a hell of a lot of effort. You don't snap your fingers and create that. Yeah.
And even above services, like I said, like, I mean, I think the benefit of going with, let's say something like an Infor is that we are providing those different use cases and all these different technologies, but then you still always call our support team, right? Have an entire services team that is set up to tune to do all of these different things. And so I think it's also a little bit of a peace of mind that you don't have to worry whether it's your application or the AI that's sitting on the top of the application or something else that's potentially going wrong or that you need help with. It's just one company that's kind of really going to provide that for you. I mean, I think that actually does provide a little bit of peace of mind because I don't think anyone's really nailed it yet otherwise.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I said this on the main stage in Vegas, but that MIT research that came out several months ago that said, you know, 95% of people aren't getting a return on ROI on AI. A flawed study, but one of the survey questions in there that nobody really talked about the press level was when people were asked, who do you want to work with on your AI initiatives? They want to work with trusted vendors, which is people they already know, to your point. That's why. That's why they're saying, look, I that'd be somebody I'm used to calling that I know picks up the phone, that I know is going to be responsible here. So that's another huge advantage, I think, for all the incumbents out there. I want to put another survey data point here on the table. So another question we asked these executives, right, was around how much AI could help reduce service labor, right? Traditional services, traditional support, traditional implementation, PS. And 100% of them said anywhere from a third to two thirds of current traditional service activities. So I'm curious where you see the greatest opportunities for AI in your service motions, you know, internally.
You know, we're certainly using it for a lot of that kind of, I would say certainly like the repeatable work that can be helpful for us. I mean, it's sometimes a difficult stop for me only in that, for instance, for a support organization for a highly complex platform like ours, right?
Mm-hmm.
AI can help 5 to 10%, but it's never going to actually solve that complex troubleshooting that is required, you know, a custom configured customer implementation plus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in a support organization that's dealing with like a much simpler product or, you know, many more how-to questions, of course, like that can be a little bit easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, I think there's different levels of benefit. I think we find a lot of benefit in automation, for sure. Mm-hmm. The things that have to happen throughout our organization that can be done automatically, you know, from end to end. We're using it quite a bit in terms of identifying problems at scale, right? So it's like this ability to take the massive amounts of data and find those, you know, patterns and really help us hone in on the most important ones or things that are brewing, right? Like there's a lot of work that's going on around that. And certainly in services, just how to reduce effort on the things that just someone doesn't have to go in and click on a lot of different configuration buttons, right? So we're, you know, we're certainly automating and using AI to help us do that. I mean, there's tons of use cases in there. Depending on the complexity, I think the level of impact is just going to be.
So I'm curious, a couple of things. So number one, are you seeing any success with AI in terms of customer health adoption? You know, using AI modeling to say, oh, this customer is falling behind or we have some risk here. Any experiments there?
We built like an AI adoption nurture agent. So literally we can feed
For
the customer, but it's like it's completely done on its own, right? So because again, we have all this, we have, you know, content, we've got all this great insight into telemetry and what's relevant for an industry. We can see what people are using or not using. And we literally are crafting automated recommendations, next best actions, automatically then pulling content and creating that content and then sharing it with customers.
Yeah.
Basically, hey, folks in a micro vertical like you are also using this. Here's some examples. Here's some content. You know, just like learning, right? So we're planning and actually we have a lot more in mind for that kind of concept. But again, being micro vertical, having the data, having the content, and using AI to just automate the end-to-end creation of that next best action kind of process.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. It's cool.
Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSI Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence.
I'm super bullish on AI in terms of really better understanding customers so that literally I do envision a world where both CSMs and account executives wake up and literally the model is giving them guidance on who they should be talking to today about what.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we're not quite there, but success plans should not be created by individuals anymore, right? I mean, that can be AI created.
Yeah.
What is happening in the news with these folks?
Exactly.
What do we already know about them?
Yeah.
Come up with some actions going forward.
I've seen some good examples of it, but I still think it's early days. And I think what's fascinating to me, Mari, is the technology is already there to do it.
Absolutely.
The technology is already there to do it. There is a lag of adoption in, I think, with some of the sales teams, with some of the, you know, just the account-facing teams, which leads me to another sort of follow-up question here in terms of use cases. Tell me a little bit about how the governance you have around, because like you just said, there are so many potential use cases you could be chasing. You can't chase them all. So how do you prioritize within your organization? Do you have like a team that's picking the ones with the biggest ROI and making sure that you roll them out? Because I think another question we get from a lot of people is like, what's the structure, the governance model around these, you know, AI capabilities?
I mean, I think we think it's really important to kind of do both a bottoms up and a top down. And what I mean by that is, you know, so we have an AI governance body because we had so many experiments going on out there. And I actually really love fostering experimentation, but only to a certain point. So it doesn't kind of eat up any resources on things. So we have this governance body that we funnel most, should be all of our AI. Yeah,
most.
Just being honest here.
So
it's supposed to go through this governance body. We do discuss it. We absolutely try to size it, impact, and sometimes even give it a few more resources, right? Mm-hmm. So someone's maybe not doing it on their own if we see really a lot of opportunity. And there's a prioritization that goes on there. But on the flip side, we're also looking at it from a strategic top-down perspective, which is like, where do we believe are the biggest problems that we need to solve for?
Yes.
And getting bright minds to think about them, right? And so I do believe I love fostering innovation from the ground up because folks see things we never do, you know, it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
But I think there's also a lot of value in saying, what are some of the biggest problems we have and how could we really reimagine that customer experience or the employee experience by looking at it in a different way?
So this has really been interesting to me, kind of watch this unfold over the past, let's say, 2 years. I would say if you put the clock back 2 years ago, most of the tech companies I'm talking to, they were in that experimentation phase. It was very much very grassroots. And they would be like, hey, we got everybody a Copilot license or we're letting people play with different tools and sort of pilot, see what they can, you know, where's the there, right? And I think that unveiled a lot of really killer use cases. I think, you know, companies got some really good value there. I think now, as we go into 2026, companies are sort of sharpening the tip of the spear here and saying, look, we're going to have to put more discipline around these AI initiatives because we know the ROIs are there. But it cannot be the complete wild, wild west, right? We've got like, so having governance, having like, you're talking about a group of people that help prioritize. And when they identify something that maybe isn't moving fast enough, you get on it. But I think the expectation is we should be getting real ROI here systematically again and again and again. How do we do that?
Totally.
So I think there's going to be more structure around it.
And I think that also like, there's so many good use cases, but also by the way, in education and enablement and how people.
Oh, yeah.
Good example of an internal process is like how we create content and how we're able to deliver it even to our teams internally, kind of taking the same concept is so interesting because I also believe in like in just-in-time learning versus things through a bunch of classes, for instance, right? And like using AI to really serve up the right information at the right time while you're going through a pipeline or while you're going through an adoption motion and having it be really relevant information or approaches or playbooks as you're doing your job. I think there's a lot of goodness that's going to be there for multiple teams within our organization.
Yeah, for sure.
Drive efficiency in that.
So follow-up question on this and the whole AI rolling it out, et cetera, is just working with employees to get them to lean in. And I'll have this conversation before on this podcast, but what I'm seeing in terms of tech professionals right now is there's really sort of three profiles out there. One profile are these folks that are like, oh my gosh, this whole AI thing really excites me. I want to learn. And they're integrating it into just the way they work on a daily basis.
Yep.
I mean, just like in multiple, you know, use cases or whatever, and they're super excited about it. The polar opposite are people that are like showing no interest. They're like, you know, I don't know about this AI thing. You know, I don't trust it. I mean, they're kind of digging their heels in on it, that they're out there. And then you have this group in between who would like to leverage AI, but they need help. They need scaffolding. You know, you can't underestimate, you know, sort of the investment. So you have these three profiles. What I'm seeing, you know, and I use the CEO from Accenture as the example here. She's been very candid about this. You know, she looks at that landscape and she's like, look, we only have it at Accenture. We only have interest in the group that's leaning in. And if they're not leaning in, wrong fit, we got to get them out of the company. And if they're in the middle, you only got so much time to get moving, to lean in, right? So, I think that landscape exists at every company, including Infor. How do you navigate that as a leader watching this unfold to encourage people to lean in and help them understand that it's kind of non-negotiable?
Yeah, I mean, so certainly with my teams, I mean, we had probably about a year and a half ago, a friend of mine is an author of a book about, and actually her entire focus is around how to bring AI to the folks that have been, you know, a little bit more tentative.
Oh, interesting.
Her name is Allison McCullough. She's great. But we did a workshop with her and it was really all about hands-on trying to show the value and position it as like your strategic thought partner, making you the best you could possibly be. And it was interesting. You could get people over the line with like some really focused effort. I think now forward, we're You know, we have some of our learning focus for certainly 2026. It started in 2025, but really doubling down on in 2026 is AI literacy. Mm-hmm. And it's really important for us, not just because we want people to be more efficient in their jobs, but if you think about, like, again, a core part of what I just described with Velocity Suite and what we're trying to sell and do with customers, like, that is our strategy. So mm-hmm. it is really pivotal for us to try to help people along the way there. But I agree with you, if you're not interested in it, like, you probably don't have a spot long term, just because that really is where the world is going. So,
and I say this out loud quite a bit because I really want tech professionals to hear that. I think it's important that they hear that and that they think that they're kind of just going to slow roll this thing, you know, and not, you know, like, I'm not going to worry about that. I mean, unless you're retiring in the next, I don't know, 6 months, I'd say this is kind of non-negotiable. You got to be leaning into this because it's real. I mean, it's not like going away here. So, yeah, it's so I'm watching the clock. I want to give one more question here. So I already made this comment. You know, we really believe that this is not the end of tech services. This is the era of services. And the customers are going to need a lot of help unlocking the value of enterprise AI. Again, this last mile challenge is real, and more and more people are talking about it. So as a chief customer officer of an enterprise software company, right, what are you most excited about for your services organization?
I think there's this ability to become such an innovator and an entrepreneur, right? The things that team is solving for gets them pretty excited to wake up every day. I don't know, like, they're pretty pumped to engage in the technology from a completely new lens. It is still an open landscape for us. So how we are finding, again, use cases within the customers, how we're scaling those, how we're driving adoption around outcomes become like a very motivating part of the business versus kind of like the whole like utilization time construct was probably a little bit less exciting for in terms of motivation and the kind of people we're getting and the kind of interest level we're getting is pretty great. It's innovation at the core for services. So I think that is becoming an innovation engine for us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm super excited for service organizations because all service organizations, because I think when you been in this game a while like I have. I mean, historically, let's face it, I mean, services was, the shit broke, we got to fix it. I mean, that was the value proposition. And it was important, super important, but it's tough. And I believe that what happens in the AI era is that services really does become this incredibly strategic capability. Because to your point, services is the mechanism to unlock real business value. It's not just keep stuff running. It's like, we are the mechanism to get to these outcomes. That's exciting.
And well, it changes the relationship from I come in for a project and I leave. Like, you kind of, they kind of are around. And, you know, I think that whole model changes a little bit as well, where you have almost some level of your services partner. You know, it's not just a CSM, your services partner that's kind of along with you for the ride. I think there's going to be some different services models that emerge in general around this in terms of who does what and how those relationships are structured.
Yeah, I think, and just to riff on that for a second, I mean, I do think that when the dust settles, because again, historically, you know, you had a product team over there making product, kind of throwing it over the wall. You had a service team over there making sure stuff worked. And we are, as much as we try, we've been very stovepiped in terms of, you know, and everyone's kind of in their lane, and sales is over there doing their own thing, selling something you hope you can deliver. But but I think in the AI era, that really starts to blur. I mean, and I'll give you an example of this concept of these forward deployed engineers that people are, you know, getting all excited about. They're really an extension of the product team. They're just hand in glove with what's going on with the platform. And so I think that product and services end up just being so close, you know, collaborating so much better in a way that we've never seen historically.
Yeah, it's definitely a forcing mechanism, right? So this idea of, we used to have a customer engineering, but it was like still a little bit, maybe a ring fence team within product that would do this. And that forward deployed engineering is a really kind of taking that to like the really mean.
It's super exciting times. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming in today and sharing your perspective. I think you guys are doing some really exciting things over there at Infor. And I think people should be paying attention to what you're doing, because I think it does represent where a lot of these enterprise software models are going to go. And I always like to end with the question of the day. And my question is simple to everybody out there who's in a services organization. Is your organization ready for the AI era? Cheers, everybody. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas, like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.